Welcome, everyone. It's 9:30, and we'll get started. We have a lot to cover today on a topic that is maybe probably, a little puzzling to many of us in the room, and that is how do we effectively grow veggies in the winter and actually make it work? And we're very blessed to have Joshua Dysinger with us today, and I'll introduce Joshua just a little more here in a second. But let's start with a word of prayer, if we might. Gracious Father, once again, we are here on Friday morning at Ad Agra, and we feel blessed to be here. And a lot of information to listen to and soak in and think how maybe it'd be best applied back at our own homes. We thank you special way for Joshua Dysinger today, as he will help us better understand the experience he's had in winter production and growing veggies through the winter, and how to help us consider that for what we do at our own homes. Thank you for your presence here with us today and your Holy Spirit. We just ask a rich blessing on our time together. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. All righty. So, I know some of you, how many of you were here for the presentation that Joshua's parents, John and Pam Dysinger, did yesterday? Okay, so a number of you weren't here. So we'll probably go back and just lay a little groundwork. You might not have pictures for them.
I have the same, four slides that my mom
had. Oh, did you?
It's just, overview of the farm.
Okay.
And then I've added, a bunch of different
pictures.
Okay,
perfect.
But, yeah,
perfect.
I have the, where we are.
Okay, perfect. Well, let's
if
go ahead.
If it shows up, I don't know.
Yeah. It seems like it feels a little iffy, doesn't it? Well, we'll do the best we can.
Yep.
Fair enough?
Yep.
So, give us a little overview, Joshua.
This is our location. We're about an hour southwest of Nashville. So, Nashville and the surrounding area is our main market. So that's where we are, Middle Tennessee. This is our farm. And this picture is a little bit of a more topical picture of our farm. So it's a little bit different now than this picture. This was probably 2 years ago. But the fields that are furthest to the top, the six fields there that are past those long greenhouses, are no longer there. There's actually a big house in that field. this last summer, my mom's mom, my grandmother, built a house that's there. We just, last month, added a fourth greenhouse. The three that were long ways there, We added a fourth one. So that's the main what's changed from that picture. But that's a pretty good overview of the farm.
Tell us a little bit, Joshua, how did you personally get involved in market gardening? Do you remember back that far?
Yeah. Well, I mean, how I got involved in it was pretty much that I was born into it. My parents did strawberry farming starting in 98.
Mm-hmm.
So I was born in 96, so pretty much as early as I can remember. Did that for maybe 5 or 6 years, I believe, and just realized it's too risky and too difficult to have all your eggs in one basket. So I think it was 2004 that we did our first CSA, which was a winter CSA.
A little
different, but so I think 2004 we started winter CSA, and it wasn't until maybe 2010 that we even did much summer growing. So we kind of did a little backwards from how most people would start. But, yeah, so then I was obviously involved on the farm my whole life, but it came together real well. My dad's brother, Edwin, and his wife were also working on the farm with us, and we had kind of had the seasons where their family was growing the winter season. I would say in 2012, we kind of set this, you know, their family was in charge of the winter. My family was in charge of the summer because we had a little bit more manpower, I guess, more kids.
Yeah.
So, because the summer is more demanding as far as just, like, it's busier. There's a lot more, you know, the weeds are growing, like, 10 times as fast in the summer as in the winter, and everything grows way faster, and it's just more busy.
Yeah.
So we were doing the summer. My aunt and uncle and their family was doing the winter. And in 2015, they were feeling, you know, feeling like they maybe wanted to move on into some other mission. They've been doing more overseas stuff, and so they weren't sure that it was something. All their kids were married and no longer involved on the farm, and so they weren't sure that it was something that the two of them wanted to keep up. So in 2015, I ran the winter CSA kind of for them. You know, they were just going to take a season off, see how they wanted to move forward, and then, you know, decide which direction they wanted to go. So in 2015, I did the winter CSA for the first time, and they, you know, decided they wanted to be more free to be involved in other ventures. So it very, very perfectly worked out because it was 2015. I just finished up my high school, and it was just kind of like, where to go, like where's my future on the farm? Because you can only have so many like families running one farm and making an income out of it. So it just worked out really well that I was able to jump into the winter and kind of have my own season that made me feel much more a part of, you know, I had my own part that I could expand however I wanted and stuff like that. So that's the overview of how I, you know, stayed on the farm. How I started farming was just because I was there, but that's how I really decided to stay on the farm and make it a long-term thing.
Thank you very much for sharing that. I'd be curious to know, anybody here actually born on a farm? I mean, where your family was full-time farming and you were born in? No? Yeah, no, I wasn't either. I mean, most of us here at AdAgra, this is a big learning curve. I wonder if you ever felt like, did you ever feel like you had a big learning curve? Or did you feel like it was just being born into the experience? You know what I'm saying? I remember one time we were out at your farm. This was back, my son Alan, I don't know, 8 years ago or so, he was an intern.
2012.
Yeah, he was an intern at your farm, your farm there for 6 months or so.
Yeah.
And I remember coming out, we came to visit you guys, and I mean, you would have been in 2012. How old would you have been then?
16. 17, yeah.
Yeah, I remember we were down at one of these houses here, one of those houses there, and of course I was totally, totally green to any of this stuff. I had no idea. I mean, I could say, oh, those are vegetables in the ground. I knew that much, right, and those types of things. But I remember you putting wiggle wire on a house. I guess there was some in some channel lock and pulling some plastic over, and it's like you weren't even thinking about it. You were just like talking to me, and you're just like doing it. It's just like it was. It's like it was born into you. I just remember, it's like, you know, and I'm thinking like, well, how do you put that wiggle wire on? Man, you make it look so easy. I mean, it is pretty easy once you get the hang of it, but your first time out, things are a little awkward, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just think, I wonder, being born into something like that, do you ever feel like there's a big learning curve in certain areas? Do you sense that?
Not a ton. I would say that it's, you know, it's for sure a blessing. And, I mean, anybody that's done agriculture to any certain extent realizes you never really feel like you know, like, that much, you know?
It's a very humbling occupation. Good point.
It's one of those things that to my, like, personally, I don't necessarily feel like I'm, you know, any kind of farming genius and that I know like that much, but then like to someone that's, you know, not really done any and just like starting, you know, they may feel like I know a ton. Yeah. And so it's just that thing where you never really feel like you never know it all. And the other thing with being like born into it and growing up on the farm.
Yeah.
That is, you know, it's great, but there's like the slight possibly disadvantage of not necessarily knowing all the like whys, and you know, I know how to grow everything, you know, pretty much, but like, do I know why you do like everything? You know, maybe not as much as I should.
Yeah.
So when you're starting out and you're trying to just learn everything, you know, all about everything, you're learning so much, and when you just grow up doing it, you just learn, you know, I learn what we do, and you can get a little bit stuck in a rut of like just doing it because that's what you've been doing, and that's something we've really been trying to work on the farm in the last few years, is like looking at our systems and really trying to improve things and not just continuing on what we've been doing for the last 10 years.
And that's good. I mean, in a way, it's kind of like how we maybe learn our native tongue. A lot of us learn our native tongue, and we don't know why we say things in the way we say them, right? Or why we use that word there instead of using this word here. And when somebody learns the language from the ground up, they're going, well, wouldn't it be more appropriate to say that in this situation or something? And you go, oh, yeah, maybe so.
It's almost like someone that just learns it almost, you feel like, knows more because they realize, you know, why and how of everything.
Yeah.
Faith.
There's some truth.
Life is just like that.
So tell us a little bit about the farm. How much do you actually have in cultivation right now? I mean, that's about what we're looking at. I mean, I know it's a little different than this picture, but generally right now,
I think my dad had said his calculation was right at an acre and a half.
Okay.
So like these fields that are between the greenhouses there, you know, we're not counting the like driving paths between all those fields, like it's just the plot,
right?
But we're also not like, you know, just counting growing space, like the rows and everything in the rows and the walkways and everything.
That wouldn't count this area, but it would count everything inside that.
Yeah, you know, pathways, everything in the growing, but not like. So with the bigger fields in, you know, that are going this way, we have split those up a little bit more. So in the picture here, they're 40 by 100.
Uh-huh.
And there's 10, 5 by 5.
Yeah.
Now they're 30 by 100, and there's 12, I guess, 6 and 6.
So it just changed up just a little bit.
We changed up a little bit, but
So now when you're actually tell us just a little bit about are you pretty standardized? It looks like maybe these fields here are a little different design than those fields. Would that be true?
Yeah, so that's definitely one of the things that we've been trying to focus on is standardizing, and that's one of the reasons we changed all the fields instead of 40 by 100 to 30 by 100, because that's closer to what all the bigger hoop houses are that we have, 30 by 100.
Okay, so these tunnels over here are like 30 by 100.
Yeah, you can see there's one, the first one's like a little bit smaller.
Yeah.
The other two are pretty much the same design. The third one we put up is also pretty much the same design. At some point, we kind of want to redo that smaller one, so we've got four there that are all the exact same. I don't know if my dad talked about like the heating of the new one we put up is going to be like automated and heated and stuff. And the goal is to get all of those like that.
Yeah.
That's definitely down the road a little bit. We also changed on the movable ones. So these four that are lined up this way on the bottom of the screen, they move. They have three positions.
So that house can move from here to here or all the way down to here.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And they're all four like that.
Yep. Uh-huh. And we move those to the beds going the opposite direction, long way. So you can see the beds are going this way.
Yeah.
In the picture, we moved them to going this way, so they're 50 feet instead of they were like 30-something feet the other way.
Oh, I see. So these beds here, instead of going this way now, run like this.
Yep. Okay. And there's still like a 6-foot walkway between each like position for the movable. So it's 50 feet and then, or like 48 feet, walkway 48 feet. So that's not like the whole long bed.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it so that we've got 100-foot beds and 50-foot beds, which is pretty easy to, even though they're not the same, it's like, you know, for any kind of calculation or anything, it's just half.
Right.
And then those are also 30 feet wide. So, like, for our tarps and some row covers, but mostly, like, our silage tarp, all of our tarp is 30 by, like, 52.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's in the field, we're putting two tarps together. If it's in the on the movable ones, it's just one tarp. And so all your tarps are the same size. And we're not there yet. We still have all kind of different sizes, but that's like the goal. All the new tarps we're getting that we're cutting are all that size, so that everything's going to be the same size. You use two for the big field and one for the smaller field.
So when you refer to these tarps, what do you use the tarps for? What are the tarps for? Are they like there's like a solid piece of plastic, or what is it?
Yeah, a silage tarp. You can see on like the bottom left, some of the pads have like black.
Like here?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's a silage tarp.
And here maybe as well?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So we use that, and it's not necessarily, the goal is not necessarily to use this long term, you know? The goal is to be intensive enough that there's always stuff growing, you know, everywhere.
Yeah.
But it makes it so that if we finish a crop and we don't immediately have another crop that's going to be going in that place,
yeah,
we'll pull a silage tarp over it, and it encourages like worms and stuff to come up also, but it will it'll kill any kind of detritus or any of your leftover green leaves from whatever might have been growing there before. It'll make it compost like way faster than if it was just sitting out, and it keeps weeds from growing up and stuff. So you might harvest something and then not be planting another thing there for like a month.
Yeah.
So you pull a tarp over that, and then when you're ready to plant, you pull the tarp off, and it's just like perfect ground to plant in. If you'd left it without a tarp, you'd have all kind of grass and stuff growing up, and you'd have to like prepare that by, you know, wheel hoeing it and raking all the grass off and all this extra work. So that's what we use them for. And like I said, the ideal is to be intensive enough that it's not something we're using a lot. Like it's just
mm-hmm.
it's just sometimes if you have a place that's not immediately going back into crop.
Perfect. Tell me a little bit about the difference between the number of people who work on the farm in the summer as opposed to the number of people who work on the farm in the winter. Is it different? Do you have the same amount
for sure.
of people?
So in the summer, we do an internship from beginning of March to beginning of September, pretty much 6 months. And we've had roughly like 4 to 5 interns. And, you know, nothing against interns. It's something that my parents, I mean, I enjoy doing it, but my parents feel, you know, like it's a really good opportunity for young people and whoever to just be able to learn and stuff like that. But you can't necessarily count them as like a full-time worker. I mean, at the end, hopefully, you know, you can tell who's gonna make it in farming and who's not by the end. And if they're going to make it in farming, they're great help by the end. But so, you know, maybe 5 interns might really come out to be, 3 full-time workers, you know, mm-hmm. throughout the span of the season. You could say maybe you got 3, you know. So it's a little bit hard to say with that. But I would say in the summer we're running more like, you know, 5 to 6 full-time, probably 6 because Kale's been working a lot more. So, and then in the winter it's kind of been more just my wife and I, but it's been much smaller. So the goal is to be able to be running the winter just the same as the summer. So I would say if we're having 6 people, you know, if we have a 150 member CSA and we got 6 people doing it in the summer, we should be able to easily do it with like 4 in the winter. Caleb, you know, next winter will be, a full-time employee through the winter. He'll be done with school, have his license. He can be doing deliveries for us and stuff like that.
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
So for sure, next year we'll be having 3 full-time, Kelly and myself and Caleb.
How does it work? Walk us through a little bit of the transition that takes place from how you go from summer, spring-summer production and move into fall, winter production, I guess would be what it's called, or whatever. How does that transition? I mean, for instance, if you're growing on an acre and a half in the spring, let's back up. When in the spring and the summer, are all these fields here planted at least in something during that time frame between March and September generally? You have something in all those?
Yeah, pretty much. We have like, you know, three fields that are all corn, just different successions.
Yeah.
Field of okra, three fields of strawberries, maybe a field of watermelon, cantaloupe, a field of potatoes, a field of winter squash maybe. So everything at least gets one crop.
And when you're saying a field, you're talking about that 30-foot by 100-foot.
30 by 100,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, right. So you have some of those that you're doing like generally a big crop that you use maybe sometimes for storage. Those are storage.
Yeah,
some of those are storage.
Everything we grow on those is like crops that take up more space and crops that are in the ground for
a longer period of time generally.
Pretty much a long time, yeah.
Yeah.
We're not planting like lettuce out there or anything like that.
Right. So when you go to make that transition and you're going from the kind of spring summer to the fall winter, do you actually transform that entire acre and a half? You have in the entire acre and a half, are you growing stuff in the winter in that entire acre and a half as well? Or how does that work?
No, not at the moment. I mean, ideally, we would be doing more than we are right now. And, you know, future times that would be. But there's not as much of those, like, big crops that we're doing in the winter.
Yeah.
So right now, like, I will plant one of those fields, the whole thing of carrots. I'll do one, and this will probably, next year it'll probably jump to two of brassicas, so I might have like one whole field that's like cabbage and like maybe, or you know, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower kind of stuff, and then another field that's all like, you know, kale and cooking greens, and you know, just I'll probably split up to do two whole fields of brassicas, and then a field of sweet potatoes that's kind of more fall, a field of white potatoes, and that's like five fields. That's probably going to be even in our biggest growing, you know, that's probably going to be all we're getting to in the winter.
So those things you just mentioned to us, are those grown in these open fields or are they grown in the tunnels?
In the open fields.
Those are all
those things that I just mentioned are all things that I'll do a whole field of.
Okay.
In the open fields.
Do you cover it at all or is it just totally open? I mean, are you putting any kind of season extension like hoops or tarps or row cover or anything like that on?
Yeah, so some of the stuff like the carrots, you know, I still have carrots in the ground. Those ones I'll put cover over. The brassicas, I'll put cover over. The, you know, sweet potatoes and white potatoes, ideally are out of the ground before, especially sweet potatoes. White potatoes can, you know, it's okay if, ideally you get a frost, kills your tops, and then you start digging them.
Yeah.
So definitely some of the stuff, yeah, has to be covered.
You have any pictures of any of that stuff with
yeah,
you or not?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm not
Let's
sure.
see what you got.
Let's see our order. So this is our seed house.
Yeah.
Okay, so
that's okay. You can slow down.
There on the left-hand side, you can see some of the row cover we use. We pull it back. We're harvesting there.
So
this is another.
So can you go back just one? That,
yep. I don't know where I'm going. This thing's jumping all. Why is it trying to go? There we go.
So that is that in one of those tunnels? What tunnel is that? Would that be up
that's
on the high?
That's one of the big ones that was.
Down on the road, near the road.
Yeah, near
okay.
the road.
Okay. So that's a 30 by 100 foot,
30 by 100,
basically.
Yep.
And how many rows do you typically have in, or beds how, do you have in one of those?
Eight, I think.
Are these all in 30-inch spacing?
Maybe nine.
Those are all 30-inch space rows?
Yeah.
So the row format is the same regardless of whether you're putting summer crops in there or winter crops. It's
yeah.
all that mm-hmm. stays consistent.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
How about irrigation? And like during the winter, what are you doing? Do you irrigate differently in the summer as opposed to in the winter?
It should be more different than it is.
Okay.
It should be a lot of drip irrigation, or drip irritation, as JM calls them, and that's why it's not. It's really, I just don't like drip. I mean, it's such a pain. So,
okay, explain. Just time out for a second. So why do you think the drip irrigation is more of a pain? What about it is it that you don't care for?
So it takes a lot more time to put it out. So on the right hand side, you can see
right here. You see that? You see that piece of plastic that's running right there? That has like little teeny slits, right? Yeah. That emit little droplets of water, like every 6 inches, 12 inches, or something.
Yeah, it's got like a little pressure kind of valve thing on the end. So when the water turns on, it goes through it. Pushes that to make the water not come out the end, and then it just is like a little pressurized hose, and it just kind of oozes in these little spots, drips out water. So the reason that it's just a pain is, for one, it just takes a lot more time to put out. You know, for this greenhouse, one row of sprinklers takes me a minute to put up. For one, they're pretty much always there. We got that pipe. You can see on the left-hand side.
This one here?
It runs down the middle of the hoop house.
Uh-huh.
It's got like four little grommets. We have sprinklers that are on a spike. You just stick it in the ground, stick the hose in there. I mean, it takes, you know, seconds. For the drip, you're talking about putting up three lines per bed. So you're talking about, 25 lines. And it takes just as long to put out one as it does to put out your whole sprinkler line that does the whole thing.
Right.
And then also, if you're cultivating, it's like a pain to cultivate around it. But the reason that we should be doing it more is just because, especially for us in such a humid environment, even in the winter, it's still very humid. It keeps your plants drier, obviously, because you're not putting water on them. The water's just kind of oozing into the ground.
Right.
And so you have much less issue with mold kind of stuff, which can be a pretty big issue in the winter.
Mm.
Because when you've got your covers on there, you got this, humid ground, the plants are letting off moisture or whatever, and the underneath of the cover gets very damp and just starts dripping back down. And so it's a very humid environment under there. And so that just would help not on everything, but on all like the greens and lettuce and stuff.
So the idea is that even though the drip irrigation is something that's more difficult to work with, you feel like it's actually better in regards to most of your plants for the winter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's better for winter growing. It just keeps you from having more rot and mold issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about this here. What is this white stuff right there?
That's floating row cover. Bought it at Farmer's Friend. it's kind of like a dryer sheet type of material. You can get different weights. One thing to note, if you're in a environment that's getting, below 20 in the winter, some crops you might need to double cover, and it's better to double cover than to double thickness of your row cover. So I'm not sure what the term is for the different thicknesses of row cover. I don't think it's the same as like plastic, like
right. But they have like a lighter weight, more of a medium weight, kind of more of a heavy weight.
Yeah, there's different weights.
Yeah.
And so it's better to double up two lighter weights than to do one cover that's double as thick, because you got some air in between there, and it's better insulation.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's what we use. And I'll go back over to this. You can see in this picture too. We have these metal hoops.
Yeah, right.
To the left hand side.
Uh huh.
This is our fennel from this winter. But we have these hoops, and that helps a lot with moisture and stuff, and keeping it a little bit more aerated underneath your covers. Like this fennel is growing up almost to the hoop, so it doesn't really matter too much. But like with lettuce and some of your smaller crops, you've got a lot more airflow under there, which helps it not be as moist, and also gives it a lot more protection from the cold because your cover's not sitting straight on the leaves of your crop.
So you take that white floating row cover and you pull it over those hoops?
Yep. So that's like this is that. Actually Kelly's flower tunnel right now, so there's flowers under that. But that gives a picture of the cover over the hoops. Also, you can see one of our little wobbler irrigation things there. That's the overhead irrigation that we use.
So I'm blind. I'm missing it. Where is it?
It's like up against the plastic. It's big on the right-hand side.
Oh, it's like this thing that is right in the middle of the hoop. Oh, over here.
Yeah,
way over,
the
way over there.
It's
I got gotcha.
You. Because we, this is on our movable pads. We run one irrigation line down the middle of the pad, but this hoop house is only half the width of the pad. And so when we put it up, it was like this side was going on the irrigation line because it was in the middle of the pad. So ideally, you'd have one like down the middle of the hoop house instead of on the side. But anyway, she has drip in here anyway, so we're not using that, but that's just a picture. I don't know if I have any other pictures.
How many folks here in the room have some of this floating row cover, the white sheet? Raise your hand if you have that. Okay, so about maybe a third. So most people.
Yeah.
How important is that for winter growing?
I mean, if you're growing somewhere that it gets below 25, it's crucial. I mean, you kind of have to protect your plants. So
now, does this floating row cover, does it still work effectively even if the what you're growing isn't in one of these larger hoop houses?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it gives the same kind of protection. It's just you know, like for lettuce or something, if I have it in a hoop house, I got the hoop house, and then I got a roof, a floating row cover, it's two layers.
Yeah.
If I've got it outside, I might just have two layers of floating row cover. So it's, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about how often you take this on and off during the winter time.
As often as possible, you take it off. It can be a little difficult and kind of a pain because, you know, you're just always pulling it on and off. But I don't always go uncover everything just on one day that's going to be above freezing, which, I mean, most of our day, we don't have that many actual, like, days that don't get above freezing in our area. It's mostly just the nights it's freezing. So if I have, like, one or especially two nights that it's going to be above freezing, so I could pull it off and it's going to be off for, like, 2 or 3 days, then I'll go pull everything off. Because it just helps the plants to breathe and dry out a little bit and not.
They probably get more sunshine.
Yeah. Definitely better with sunshine and growth.
So let's say you have a day, I'm just throwing out a scenario. You have days that are going to be 50 degrees in the day and 25 degrees at night. And you see that for a whole week.
Yeah.
Tell me and they're sunny. They're sunny days. Walk us through how you would deal with the floating row cover and stuff like that.
In the winter, a lot of our, I mean, almost every day we're doing some harvesting. So if I'm harvesting something, I'd uncover it, obviously. And I'd harvest and I'd leave it uncovered. And I'd do my harvesting for, you know, whatever I'm harvesting and leave everything uncovered. And then at the end of the day, I'd go back and cover up everything that I've uncovered. And then the next day, chances are I'm going to be harvesting different stuff, so I'd have other stuff that I'm uncovering. So if it's just a day that's going to be above freezing, it's going to be freezing again at night, I'm not going around and uncovering everything. I'm just, if I uncover something, I'll leave it uncovered. And then, you know, 30 minutes before sundown, I'll quickly go around and cover everything back up that's been uncovered. And that kind of, you know, everything gets, you know, it all comes out to a similar amount of exposure.
Yeah, one of the things, because, I mean, you know, we have a small farm, much smaller than yours, but it's a commitment, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite, you know, once it's all out there, at least, like, right now, I don't have a ton of stuff. I can probably cover everything in, like, 30 minutes with two people. It's one of those jobs that's five times faster with one more person. You know? it's just way better with two people.
Right.
So it probably only takes me, if everything's uncovered, it probably only takes me about 30 minutes to go around and cover everything up. You know, when you're setting it all up, it's a big, you know, your first freeze, it's a day. You know, if you're trying to cover everything in October, you know, you got a lot in the ground, and it's a full day just be pulling stuff out, putting up hoops, getting all your sandbags. It's a lot of work, but once it's all out, it's much easier.
Very good. What do you have next on the next picture for us?
I don't know. Let's see. Oh, this is this was along with my favorite crop.
Okay. Yeah, tell us about that.
I would say lettuce is my favorite crop just because it's just so pretty. And this isn't all lettuce. We got like some dandelion greens and some chicory stuff there on the right. But the left-hand side, I think, is pretty much all lettuce. And I just love like a clean house of lettuce. It's just like, you know, you got your different stages, different succession plantings.
It's beautiful.
Red, green, you know, it's just really pretty.
Do you mind going back to that other picture just for? So that house over there, that looks like one of your movable houses.
Yep.
So is there a point where that house, is there anything planted in that house right now?
It doesn't look, I don't know when this picture is from.
Okay.
This is from a year or two ago. It doesn't look.
Would that house move in the wintertime? Would you actually move that house over something in the winter or not so much?
Potentially. So our movable houses, we haven't had the greatest system. And I wish I had pictures. I mean, it's not really the focus of this. But we just did a renovation on one of them that is just huge. So on this one, you can see these pipes sticking up. So we have, like, little caster wheels that sit in those pipes.
The pipes that are sticking up. Are you talking about
along the edge here?
Like here?
These pipes.
Oh, that
yep.
Right there. Gotcha.
You got all of them along the edge.
Yeah.
The same thing on the other edge.
Yeah.
You got these little caster wheels that stick in, and it's like a little ball bearing thing on top. The bottom of the greenhouse is on an angle iron, and so it rolls on that, and it's extremely hard to push. I mean, like 8 or 10 people to push it, and it takes, you know, it took us. You know, a good 3 or 4 hours because we have to pull out our T-stakes. We put in T-stakes around the hoop house, use like pipe clamps to clamp it down, to hold it down. You got to undo all those. We'd have to put like some straps to pull it together so it wouldn't splay out. It was just a big process. We modified one of them to have a little concrete track,
mm-hmm.
And a pipe that's on the concrete track. And wheels that are like inverted kind of wheels that roll on the concrete track. We have little eye bolts in the concrete and little turnbuckles that attach there. So you just loosen those up. You can push it with 2 people, tighten it back up. I would say it'll take us about 15 minutes. So that's going to make it where we move them multiple times a season.
Wow.
Right now, they're not used very well, and we move them like in the spring because we're like rotating, you know, tomatoes or cucumber stuff that we grow in that. We move them in the spring, and a lot of times you just move them once a year in the spring for the new crop, and then I'll just use it there in the winter. So that's gonna be a huge game changer to be able to move them super easily throughout the season.
That sounds like a huge improvement.
Yeah, it's gonna be great.
Joshua, let's go back just a second. You don't have to change mm-hmm. the pictures, but I want to talk a little bit about the seeding,
mm-hmm.
the winter plan for the seeding. How does that work? I mean, if you're wanting to harvest, you know, something in January, when are you seeding that? I mean, obviously, it probably depends on kind of crop we're talking about. But are you seeding all the way through the winter, every week, or how does that work?
No.
I mean, one other thing, quick, just on this, compared to a spring, summer, do you seed every week in the spring? Is somebody seeding something every week in the spring, summer rotation? I mean, every week you're seeding something?
Yeah, pretty much.
So how does that change, or how do you have to think about seeding when you're wanting to do winter production?
Well, I mean, the main key is you got to think about it before the winter, you know, a large majority of our seeding is August, September. I mean, the large majority of it.
And that's for things you're going to be harvesting in November, December, January.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So
one little thing. On the back of the seed packet, Mm-hmm. You know how they say, like, oh, this is 35 days to mm-hmm. maturity or 40. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
45 days to maturity. That's probably not based on seeding maybe in September as yeah. compared to maybe seeding in March.
Yeah, for sure.
The reason is, why is that? Why is it changed so dramatically?
Yeah, well, with the both temperature, you know, getting colder, but more so your sunlight, your days getting shorter, slows down your growth a lot. And so that's one of the things that I can't necessarily give you, like, there's not necessarily a, like, a math calculation kind of thing you can do, like, okay, well, the seed catalog says this, and I'm doing it in the fall, so add this amount of days, like, it doesn't really work like that. I would say, you know, especially just because we don't have time to get into everything,
yeah.
but Elliot Coleman's Four-Season Harvest.
That's a book?
Yes.
Okay.
Is a great book if you're, or, well, no, I'm thinking of, so he's got multiple books. The Four-Season Harvest is a great book for, you know, starting growing, but he's got a book called The Winter Harvest Handbook, and that's focused just on winter, and that's a great book for some of those kind of questions. And he's got like graphs in the book that are like, you know, your months, days to maturity kind of graphs, in a cold frame, out of a cold frame, you know, in a heated greenhouse. It's just very thorough. And so you can look at that and also different zones and stuff
right.
and get a lot better idea than I could tell you on planting. And the main thing that I can just say is that you got to think about it early. And then you're planting real close together. So sometimes in the winter or in the fall, I may be planting lettuce like almost every other day, like twice a week. So, you know, I might plant on like Monday and then maybe Thursday. But that lettuce, even though it's planted 2 days, 3 days apart, its maturity may be 10 days apart. Just because in the winter, like every day on the back end of it, is adding a lot.
Yeah.
So
it's a huge deal, and we're still pretty doing that quite well. We've tried to do a little bit of winter growing this year.
Yeah.
We've done some.
Yeah.
But boy, I tell you, if you miss that window,
mm-hmm.
you almost like, okay, well, you seeded that in October, it'll be ready in March.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, on certain crops.
Yeah.
Right?
I
mean, it's that slow of a process.
Yeah, like, you know, radishes in the summer, you know, 21 days to maturity, 3 weeks.
Yeah.
It's just no time. In the winter, you know, you might be looking at 8 or 9 weeks. I mean, it's
right.
huge.
Three times the amount of
yeah.
time. Yeah.
Double or three times, you know. It depends on if you're talking outside or in a cold frame.
Right.
So.
And a cold frame would be like, the hoop house?
Yeah, like an
yeah.
unheated
uh-huh.
Hoop house.
Right.
Cause if it's
are any of the houses, I know you said your new house is going to be heated, that new
yeah.
house you're talking
mm-hmm.
about. Are any of these other houses, are they heated?
No.
So they only are heated by whatever the sun
yeah.
provides.
Yeah. Which actually is drastic. If you have a sunny day, I mean, it gets hot in there.
So what would be the difference if a plant sits outside with no kind of structure like that? Let's say it's 40 degrees and it's sunny. That outside plant may be 40 degrees. That inside plant would be what?
I mean, you better vent your hoop house in the morning, because if you have a hoop house and it's sunny, it almost doesn't matter what the temperature is outside. Like, to a certain extent it does. But if it's 40 degrees outside, you know, you'll get 90 degrees in your hoop house if there's no venting. So you gotta, I mean, even in the winter, you gotta be thinking about opening doors, opening vents. Honestly, you can see on this hoop house, like at the top, there's the darker boards. That's a vent that is swung up.
Yeah.
We no longer do vents there. It's just open. We never close it, even if it's 15 degrees. So, yeah, that's it'll heat up quick.
You get to experience the greenhouse effect every day. Then.
Yeah, it's great in the winter. It's great, except sometimes you'll get working in there and like break a sweat, and then you get outside and you get all chilled.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, what do you got next on the slide? Anything for us next?
I don't know. We'll see. So that's lettuce. Okay, so this is I've got multiple slides of our.
Let's talk about that a little bit. So you harvest. One thing I wanted to ask you in regard to irrigation in the winter. What's a rule of thumb in regards to, do you wait till the temperature gets above a certain degree before you decide to irrigate the plants, or does it not really matter?
Definitely you don't want to water, if you water in the evening, and it's going to be freezing at night, you know, that's a bad, especially if it's drip, it's not as big of a deal, but if you're overhead water on your plants, they're much more, you know, they got that water on, it'll freeze, and it can cause more damage. So if it's a sunny day, you know, and it's going to be freezing at night, you just want to get your watering done relatively early in the morning. Obviously, you don't want to water if it's below freezing, but, you know, as long as it's 40 degrees or something. Mm-hmm. If it's just a cloudy day and it's going to freeze at night, like you may, you know, look at your weather for the rest of your week and try and pick a better day to be watering.
You keep a pretty close pulse on the weather?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everybody I'm sure has heard about the, you know, around Christmas time, the whole camper thing in Nashville, the camper bomb that took out the AT&T power. Have y'all not? Was that not enough news that everybody heard about it?
I guess
no.
Not. What?
So it was. We had no. We had no cell service for only 2 days. But
it's about the end of the world.
Yeah, I'm like. I mean, it didn't feel like the end of the world for most reasons, but, like, literally the biggest issue was, like, I don't know what the weather is going to be like. And, I'm every day, multiple times, I'll be, like, looking at the forecast for the rest of the week and whatever. So it's, yeah, you stay on top of the weather.
Do you ever have any issues with any kind of pipes freezing or connections busting or anything because it gets
in
too
my
cold?
House? No. We try to like insulate with straw or drain our lines, and that's another reason that watering can be a pain in the winter is just because it's not as easy as in the summer. You can't just go flip on a valve and have water. We have water lines pretty much going to all of our individual plots and a valve box at each plot. So the underground stuff we don't really have to worry about. So we'll just turn the water off at the valve box. If it's going to be like really cold, we'll go stuff the valve boxes with hay. But it's not something that the biggest pain that I have with freezing is just for washing produce. Like, you know, every other day I've got stuff outside that I need to be spraying off, carrots, you know, be any kind of root crops, beets, radishes, whatever, and the hoses are always, you know, always frozen. But we do have one thing that's a great blessing is we have an outdoor faucet that's hot water. And so I'll just hook my hose up to that, turn it on, and leave it for, you know, 30 minutes and come back and it'll be flowing. So that's actually, if you live in a cold place, that's not a bad idea to have one of your outside faucets to hook up hot water to, because that helps a lot. Because otherwise it's hard to thaw out a big old hose that's frozen. But as far as just like irrigation and stuff, you know, you got to think about it. You got to make sure that you can drain your system enough to not be having those issues. But yeah.
So you have a picture here of a CSA drop, apparently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is one of our CSA drops.
How does your CSA? I mean, in regards to production of produce, what could somebody anticipate in regards to how much produce they're going to be harvesting and selling in the winter as compared to harvesting and selling in the summer? Is there a pretty dramatic drop off as far as just the amount of? I mean, because things are growing so slow, or have you planted so intensively that you still have, like, I mean, is your CSA as big in the winter as it is in the summer,
or
vice versa?
It's not as big, and honestly, like, we've got 4 more weeks, and we're going to struggle to make it through. We're running out of produce. But you have to plant a lot more in the fall. So, you know, in the summer, you may have, like, 2 beds of arugula, you know, and you harvest one week, and then you harvest the next one the next week, and then you can go back to the one you harvested, you know, 2 weeks ago, and it's ready to go again, and you can kind of, you know, you can, if you get 2 or 3 cuttings, you can do off those and then jump to a new one or whatever, but stuff just doesn't grow nearly as fast in the winter, so you're noticing that a lot on, like, regrowth and stuff, you know, kale. One 100-foot bed of kale in the summer, you know, you can harvest it almost every week, you know, 2 or 3 leaves off each plant every week almost. It's just growing so fast.
Yeah.
In the winter, you might have to have 3 100-foot beds because, you know, you harvest it and then it just takes a while before you can go back to harvesting it again. So, definitely you have to think about that and have more stuff growing, and I didn't do as good as I should have this year, but our CSA also expanded a lot this year. We went from, you know, previously doing like 55 to 60 members to this year doing like over 90.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a learning,
so you
a
just
learning
have,
curve.
Yeah.
And also our farm is in a bit of disrepair at the moment. We had a bit of a rough summer with weather and stuff. So I really, you know, in that picture, it looks like we have a lot of hoop houses. It's not as ideal as that looks. I have really just 2 that I'm growing and that are in good condition. Like those long ones down by the road, there's 3 of them.
Yeah.
2 of them are good that I'm growing, and 1 of them doesn't have end walls. The movable hoop houses, 2 of them don't have any plastic. 2 of them pretty much got destroyed in the summer. We've rebuilt.
Bad storm or what happened?
Yeah, we had a real bad storm, like twice in a row. Our tomato house in April, you know, key to have tomatoes covered. We had them in one of the big hoop houses. The plastic blew off of it.
Ooh.
We quickly reordered plastic, put it on, and the next week it blew off again.
Wow.
So, we've never really struggled with that, but we had some really strong storms.
I mean, just like, when was it? Like,
yeah, like straight line winds. One tunnel just, one of our movable tunnels just kind of like collapsed. Another one just bowed out. Some of the bows broke a little bit. So we have a lot of repair to do, and we're working on that and stuff, and we're also on some of our movable tunnels, especially when they were built, we put wooden end walls. They've kind of rotted out. We're transitioning them to metal end walls. 2 of the hoop houses are done. 2 of them still need to be worked on. So we just are not in the greatest place right now for this winter season for me to have good growing space. Next year is going to be much better. So that also was an effect, because the stuff that's growing in the hoop houses just is doing tremendously better than stuff out. So, yeah, that's part of our struggle this year. But
how does the CSA? Tell us a little bit about how the CSA works. I mean, you're there. Do people just drive up, pick up their crate, or what happens?
Yeah. So our CSA method if we look at year round income for our farm, it's definitely our number one. In the winter, it's extremely high. Our number one. In the summer, it's almost 50-50 with farmer's market, but it is higher, especially since we're only doing one farmer's market now.
Yeah.
But it's for sure our number one. So It's a subscription thing for the whole season. Someone signed up, they get a box every week or every other week, depending on which subscription they sign up for. And yeah, I'm just here for 1 hour. I got like, you know, maybe 25, 30 boxes right there.
Yeah.
People come up, unload their box into bags, and they're good to go.
So do you have multiple drops in a day, or do you typically have different drops on different days?
In the winter, we have it all on different days, and that's another thing that we'll be changing next year. We'll be keeping the same schedule as the summer, which will help because Caleb will be able to be doing deliveries and stuff. So in the winter, it's every Tuesday and every Thursday, and it's the same in the summer. But in the summer, so in the winter, we have two locations on Thursday, and we do every other Thursday. So each location is picking up every other week.
Oh, I see.
Understand that?
Yeah, they're getting it
so
basically.
So the full share people get like a $66 box, and the half share people get a $33 box. In the summer, we're doing delivery at each location every week, and the full share people are picking up their box every week, and the half share people are picking up their box every other week. And those two Thursday locations are at the same time, two different places. So we have to be split up there. So that's a goal moving on in next year, to be keeping it the same.
Do you run two different drivers, or is the same driver on the same day? They just go
once? Two different drivers, because it's the exact same time.
Okay, gotcha. So you have two vans or whatever, two drivers.
Yeah, so this year, we switched our Tuesday. This is our Tuesday location, and it's our only location on Tuesday. So last year, we still were doing it every other week, and then just every other week, we weren't having any delivery on Tuesday, which was nice. But this year, we switched this location to our ideal schedule, and that's being there every week, full share getting it every week, half share getting it every other week. Next year, we'll change the Thursday location to see that. So we'll have one delivery on Tuesday, two deliveries on Thursday.
Very good.
We'll have to have two drivers.
What do we got next up here?
That's just a CSA box from, I don't know, that's from a few years ago. It looks like it's actually kind of like maybe a transition box from the summer, because there's some tomatoes and stuff. But that's our farmer's market, which is a little bit part of my season, not as much. You know, technically, my season kind of starts in September, I guess, and our CSA ends the end of October. So we've got like a few months that we're doing that. I mean, Kelly and I actually do it all year, but just some farmers market pictures. I guess that's all I have. So,
well, let's take 5 minutes or so. We're about almost out of time, but let's see if there's any questions anybody might like to have. Okay, we got a couple here. I'll come around and, oh, here, hang on, let me put my mask on. gotta be kosher, right? All right.
What are your issues with things like deer and things like, it looks so yummy. So do you have more problems with animals?
Yeah, go back. Well, actually, I think the recording was horrible because I didn't realize they were recording. I did a class on that yesterday. I was going to say go back and listen to it, but probably don't. We use deer fencing, a flex plastic deer fencing. You can buy it at Home Depot online. It's actually pretty common online. So you just want to get there's like a proper name for it or whatever. At Home Depot, they just called it flex plastic deer fencing. But you just want one that's pretty tough. But that's what we use. It's like 6 feet tall. And it's got, I don't know, it's because it's not like a big permanent fence, it kind of seems to like mess with the deer a little bit. Like they're not comfortable. They can't tell visually like where it is, and they're just not comfortable jumping over it. Like we have other fences that are permanent. They'll jump over them, like into pastures. Doesn't really matter. But something about the fence, it's kind of wave, you know, it's loose a little bit, and it works great. We don't have really any issue if we put a fence around something.
Sure. Profit margins for you versus, say, spring, summer, also seeds, do you buy your own or do you prepare yours from your own harvest, and then the temperature difference for if you have a hoop house versus a hoop house and the sheet dryer material.
Yeah,
that
the cover,
put on the
row cover.
Row cover, thank you.
So the income question. So currently, I mean, my winter season still running from the same farm, you know, infrastructure and everything. In this, both in the summer and in the winter, 50% of the income goes straight back into the farm. At some point, hopefully, that number will be able to drop a little bit. But we're still, I mean, you know, we've been farming for a while, but we're still putting a lot into the farm. So 50% of the gross income, I guess, goes straight back into the farm, both in the winter and summer. And then the rest is.
And then I think he asked something about seeds. Do you buy? Are you asking? Do they buy? I imagine.
We do not. So my dad did do something this year that is good, and he bought. So if you're saving seeds, you have to have open pollinated seeds, and a lot of the crops that we grow that are, you know, more resistant to different pests and stuff are hybrid seeds. And you can't save seeds from them. So my dad went through and purchased every crop that we grow pretty much in open pollinated seed, and we have a stock in our freezer. So if, you know, anything goes crazy and we can't be buying seeds, we've got a stock of all these seeds to start and then be able to be saving. We don't find that saving seeds is efficient on a market gardening scale. But we do, you know, understanding the times that we know are coming and not going to be able to buy and stuff like that, we do feel like it's important to be able to do that. And seeds last in the freezer indefinitely. So that's where we're at right now. We're purchasing in the freezer. I don't know, -2 or I think that's like just, yeah, I don't know.
Okay, one more question and then we'll.
I was just not clear on a couple of things.
Yeah.
You have weekly pickups for full share customers in the winter.
So that's what I was saying on our locations. Our Tuesday location, we do have weekly pickup for our full share. Our Thursday location, this year is still every other week because we have two locations and we're not capable of doing them at the same time. Next year, we will be switching so that we'll be doing both Thursdays every week, and our CSA members will still be picking up every week. So right now, if you're a Thursday full share, you're getting a double box every other week. If you're a Tuesday full share, you're getting your regular box every week. Does that make sense?
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Hey, thank you so much, Joshua Dysinger.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.